Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now we'll turn the meeting over to Ms. Regan Kelly. Ma'am, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for our new webinar today. My name is Regan Kelly. I'm the editor at the Greater IBM Connection, and we're delighted that you could join us for this special webinar with Molly Wendell. Molly is an entrepreneur and a Greater IBMer, and today's webinar is the 10th in our series called the Career on Track series. And if you've been around at all, you're probably familiar with Molly and some of the information that she imparts with us. And today she's going to talk a lot about your attitude and what your attitude has to do with your job search, with your income and your outcomes. So we're going to delve a little bit deeper into that subject today. And with that, I'll turn the call over to Molly.
Hey, thanks so much, Regan. Hey, before we get started, let's fast forward a little bit on the slides. Because I think we have a little bit of information about the Greater IBM Connection. And if people need to be, stay on this slide for a second, because if people need to be both on the audio conference as well as the web conference, I just sent out the passcode for the U.S. number. And the passcode's career, well, everyone who's on it already knows the passcode. Okay, we're going to take questions probably halfway through. And then again at the end. So if you do have a question, just raise your hand, and what we'll end up doing is just opening the line up to questions about halfway through, and then again at the end. Okay, so let's get started here. As Regan said, I'm talking today about how attitude drives your income. One of the biggest issues that we have, that I see people in the job search, is they're so, I want to say, stressed. And it's not just people in the job search; it's people who are working. They're so overly focused that they're forgetting that some of their personality, some of their attitude is really making an impact on their outcomes as well as their incomes. And so what we're going to do, talk today about how you can make your attitude positively affect your income instead of negatively affect your income. Okay. So first thing we're going to look at is the age-old question of attitude. Really, everyone looks at a glass of water and says, how much is in your glass? Is it a glass half full? Is it a glass half empty? And it's that positive versus negative thinking that drives a lot of people. A lot of people tend to have a lot of, potentially have a lot of baggage that causes them to think negatively. That's usually what is the issue around thinking negatively. And I kind of look at it and say, if you imagine a glass of water, and it was pure spring water, and imagine someone putting a drop of poison in there, and the poison representing the negativity, think about what happens to the water. You know, that little drop of poison can completely pollute that water. That little negativity can completely pollute the positivity unless you do something to stop it. And how do you stop that poison, and how do you go from the negative to the positive? And the big thing is, I mean, if you have a situation where there's a negative compound in your water, what you'd normally do is put more water in there to dilute the compound, right? So the more positiveness you can throw in that water, the more pure water you can throw in, it will dilute the negativity. And it's often something that you have to continue to practice. It's not something that if you don't naturally think that way, it's something you absolutely have to continue to practice. It's interesting. It's one of the things as I watch people, I see that positive people tend to shrug things off more easily, to let go, and it's interesting to watch how people react and respond. And sometimes we're so caught up in the reacting and responding that it drives us crazy. The next thing, so now we're going to talk about that react-respond. Have you ever noticed that there's a certain number of people that fly off the handle about everything? There is this woman that I know, and she actually accused me, very accusatory in an email, about claiming that we had done fraudulent activity on her credit card. And I'm looking at her going, or thinking, oh, my gosh, what have we done? Let's figure this out, because the last thing we want to be known for is anything fraudulent. And we're here to serve our customers, and we're here to have great relationships for our customers. So We didn't want to cheat anyone out of any money or have people think we were cheating them out of money. So it was a Saturday morning. She sent this really long email, very accusatory email. At about 10 a.m., I called her up immediately and said, "What is going on? You know, what have we done?" And she explained the situation. Well, it turns out that it wasn't our fault. It was her fault. And she wanted to cancel, and she never canceled, and she never told us about it. And she just called her credit card company and told them that we were being fraudulent. And she just flew off the handle. And instead of calling us and saying, "Hey, here's what I want to do. Let's make this happen," she just went crazy on us. And so I started thinking and remembering a couple months previously, I had a book party, and I had a workshop prior to that, and I said, anyone who comes to this workshop and pays for the workshop will get one of my books autographed. And so I did a big book party and told people, if you can't come to the book party, let me know how we can get you the book. You know, let us know your address. Let us know whether you want to come pick it up at the office. Anything works for us. So I didn't hear from her for about 3 months, and finally I get an email from her, very accusatory again, calling me a liar and saying that I committed to giving her a book and I never gave it, and therefore I'm a liar. And like, she's nuts. I remember that night. It was a Friday night, and it was raining. It was about 7:30. I went and delivered. I drove to her house and delivered the book personally because I felt so bad that she didn't read the emails that we sent and didn't come to the party and you know, didn't do her part of being involved in our, you know, in getting her end of the deal. And but this scathing email that she keeps sending, not only about the book but about the credit card, and then all I could think is, you know, both times we actually handled the situation as if she had been a rational person and reached out to us in a rational manner. But instead, I mean, she's nuts. And guess what? The next time she reaches out for her job search or for anything, I'm not really sure I can help her, because if she flies off the handle for situations that are pretty much her negligence, how is she going to deal with a situation from a coworker? How is she going to deal with – how does she treat people? How does she treat people at her house? I'm absolutely not sure, and I'm certain that we're not the only organization who's been the target of her wrath. I mean – part of me thinks she doesn't need a job. She needs maybe anchor management or something. But I've seen those people over and over again. And so there are a certain number of people saying, you know, that's not me. But I think it's more people than people realize. I mean, we all go off the deep end sometimes. And we have to remember that our life is a world of minor inconveniences. And if we can quit making a major event out of everything, life might be a much happier place. So how do you do that? It comes back to the react, respond, release. I was at a yoga retreat a couple months ago, and our yoga teacher was talking about the concept of fight or flight, the survival instincts, and how we as humans have another component to us, and that is the concept of witness. And I call this, you know, fight, respond, and witness, release. And think about it. Let's say a driver cuts, you know, you're driving down the road and someone cuts you off. You know, what do? Do you react by honking your horn? Do you respond by cutting them off? Or do you do something entirely different? Do you just, completely out of character for many drivers, do you just release it and let it go? And really, ask yourself, what would happen if you didn't react? What would happen if you didn't honk your horn? What would happen if you didn't respond? You know, didn't try and return that cutoff favor. What would happen if you just calmly released it and kept moving forward to your destination in peace? You know, you don't have to always let every situation get the better of you. And the more you remember and set your expectations appropriately, that life is full of all kinds of surprises and life is full of challenges. And if you just expect that, and then when things are a little easier, life will be a little easier. Okay, let's talk about communication now. So there's a couple of different ways that I've seen people's attitudes negatively affect them in terms of communication. The first one is in the email responses. So I see people, I ask you, what are your emails saying about you? Are they saying you're a mad person, an angry person? Are they saying you're a bad speller? Because some of them are. How email creates a tone may or the tone that the email creates may or may not be accurate about how you actually feel. But you know that I think it's 70% of our language, our body, of our communication is through body language and through tone of voice. And it, and when you take email, put email in the picture, you're losing that 70%. And so there's huge room for error about not having an opportunity to get the message across appropriately. I was I got an email from someone recently. He was telling me about how he had, or actually the company was telling me that they had gotten an email from someone, and this guy was saying, you know, your service is of no value to me, in a very, very terse email. And they were really worried about this. And so the owner of the company called him up, and it turned out he'd been using their service for a couple of years. And it's strange, if he hasn't gotten value over a couple of years, then you kind of wonder why he's using their service and paying for their service. But it turns out when the owner called them that actually he hadn't gotten value in like the last 2 weeks, and that's why he was saying he hasn't gotten any value. But instead of his email saying, I've gotten tremendous value from you for the last couple of years, but the last 2 weeks I really haven't used it, so I'm not interested in continuing the service, he makes it sound like it's all the company's fault, not his fault. And it makes it sound like the company's the bad guy. And the owner said, you know, when I called him up, he was so much nicer on the phone than his email implied. And it goes back to so many people hide behind the veil of email. They'll have conversations with people in a perceived tone that they wouldn't dare talk to people on the street or in a networking event or coworkers like that. And so you've got to step back and say, how are my emails, how could they be interpreted? And if there's any room that there could be interpreted the wrong way, then perhaps I shouldn't send an email. Perhaps I should just get on the phone with someone. It happens all the time. You know, people think in email they're using humor when they're really, it might be funny to them, but it doesn't quite come across because the tone and the inflection of the voice and all the things that are necessary in that, it never comes across. So I would just question yourself in ensuring that your email responses are used appropriately. I remember a good friend of mine called me one day, and she asked me if I was mad at her. And I said, well, no, why in the world would I be mad at you? I don't think I've even talked to you for a couple months. And then part of it was like, maybe that's why she thinks I'm mad at her, because I haven't talked to her in a couple months. But she had sent me an email about a week before, and I hadn't responded yet. And I was just telling her, I'm like, look, the problem is I'm overwhelmed with email. I have so many emails, I don't know what to do. And while I have perfect intent to respond, it just got buried in the rest of them. I forgot about it. It had nothing to do with her. But sometimes the lack of email response is also a communication, and people on the lack of receiving end of that, the email that you never sent, they also sometimes take things out of context. The next area let's talk about on communication is your voicemail message. So how many of you, and we'll go to the next slide, how many of you have a voicemail message that you're proud of? Whoops, go back a little bit. One more. How many of you have a message that you're proud of? And what does your voicemail message say about you? I mean, is it friendly? Is it serious? Do you have an automated greeting? I'll tell you what, if you have an automated greeting on your voicemail, you need to get rid of that and use your own personality. And please have a personality on your voicemail. I don't know what it is about when people are recording their voicemail, they kind of get stage fright and they sound scary. So my sister, I keep telling her, change your voicemail. You sound like the strangest person I've ever met, and you're not the strangest person I've ever met. But think about if your voicemail is not a reflection of what your personality is and not a reflection of a personality, then you need to make it one. And be friendly and not so, I wouldn't say joking, but not be so serious. Not be so terse is really what I mean. So think about being friendly, think about engaging. Think about if you are on the receiving end of that voicemail, how would you feel about this person? Would you feel like it'd be someone I would like and want to be around? Or would this be someone that I'd quickly like to leave a message and pray that they never call me back? So it also goes in line with answering the phone. how you answer the phone and what message is that sending. I mean, are you serious or are you interesting and fun? Do you sound too busy? I know I often sound too busy because I answer the phone, Molly Wendell, and I say it very quickly because I think, well, if you're calling me, you know my name or you know who I am, and that's why you're calling me. So I say, this is Molly, and you already know who I am, so I don't need to repeat it, even though I do. But oftentimes some people answer their phone like it's a big surprise. And like you're inconveniencing them. There's a woman that my dad used to work with at a television station, and when she would answer the phone, you could just see the smile on her face, and it was always incredible to call them. You never felt like you were interrupting her. You never felt like you were a bother. She was just pleasant as can be, happy as can be, and when a lot of people were when it was easy to let go a lot of people, she's always done very well in her roles because she's got this great attitude and this great friendly demeanor that is warm and welcoming and a great, from a customer service standpoint, is a great first experience that a customer, touch that a customer would experience. So start thinking about that when you're answering your phone. The other day I was making calls to a lot of our customers just to check in and see how they're doing, and I was amazed how many of them answered the phone like they were mad and like I was a huge interruption. And I kept thinking, gosh, if this is not a good time, why are you answering the phone, number one? And two, if let's say I was someone that wanted to hire you or wanted to do business with you, and this is how you answer the phone, I probably think twice about wanting to talk to you further because my impression of you is not a favorable one. You just sound mean and mad, and that's not the person I want to hire. So think about it in when you're answering the phone. The other little trick is to put a mirror right by your phone when you're talking on the phone to remind yourself to smile. And smiling on the phone, people can hear it. So you probably can hear that I'm smiling right now on the phone, and then if I'm not, you can probably hear that too, which is right now. So think about that and think about what kind of message that's sending and how people see your attitude in so many other ways. Okay, let's talk about in person and what your attitude is saying about you in person. You know, are you approachable? Do you walk into an event with a smile on your face, or are you the person who wears the negativity on your shoulder? I remember we did a happy hour, and this guy Jerry comes in, and you could just see it from a mile away. His shoulders were slumped. He looked like Glum from Gulliver's Travels. I don't know if you remember that, but remember he was the guy who kept, he always said, "We're never going to make it. We're never going to make it." And he was such a downer. And so when this guy Jerry walked in, the first thing I thought of was, oh, no, here comes Glum, and he's never going to make it. And I say, hey, Jerry, what's going on? And I have a big smile on my face because I'm excited to see everybody. And he said, he goes, oh, you know how it is. I lost my job again. And I'm thinking, okay, Glum, okay, well, you know what? That just means there's a better one for you. He's like, no, you never know. This economy is horrible. And I kept thinking, you know what, with that kind of attitude, it is horrible. It's horrible for you. You will never find a job with that kind of attitude and that kind of persona. And so when you're out there, when you're out anywhere, think about what kind of persona you're giving off and what you're communicating with people. I was at the train station yesterday, and this was the first time in the city I had gone through the train station. And I was a little flustered because I was trying to make the train. I had about 2 minutes, and then I had to buy a ticket. And then I brought the little train ticket over to the swiper, and it showed the little thing to swipe the barcode right here. And I looked at the card, and I'm like, this doesn't have a barcode. What do I do now? And this really nice guy comes up. He goes, hey, do you need help? And I said, yeah, this is my first time. He goes, it's my second. I'm like, oh, well, you're a veteran to me. So he helped me through it, but it was so nice and so friendly, and it made me feel really good. He helped me out, but he had a smile on his face. He was happy to be there, and he wasn't this glum person. And so think about whether you're at the grocery store, whether you're at a family's soccer game, a children's soccer game, whatever it might be, think about what your facial expressions and your attitude and the smile on your face articulate to people, and does it articulate something that someone that other people would like to be around? Okay, let's talk about negativity and how that drives people away. And when we talked a little bit about it, about how that drives people away, there is someone I know who told me the other day, she said, you know what, there are certain people that only call me when they need a job. And that's the only time I ever hear from them. And I never hear from them to say, hey, how are you doing? It's always they're in a bad mood, they just lost their job, and now they're calling me to give me the lowdown and the sob story and the pity party, and I don't want to hear it. And quite frankly, I don't know who to refer them to, because if they give that to me, I don't want to subject my friends to that negativity, so I'm not going to. I think about, on the Converse, there's this guy named Mark, and he runs an advertising agency, and I called him up the other day, and I said, hey, Mark, I have an idea for you. Now, I know quite a few people who are in the advertising business, and I could have picked any one of them, but this guy, Mark, every time I call him, he's happy. Every time I see him, he's happy. Every time, he's just always positive. He's always, you know, so what if the economy is like this? We're doing some really interesting things, and it's really an exciting time to be in this business. And, you know, I thought, if I can help anyone, I want to help him, because I would love him to have more business. I would love to have him have more opportunity, and I would love the people I know to do business with him, because I know they're going to get a great experience. I think about that also when I come across people who are in the job search. When I hear about a position, you know, I could refer 30 people for every position I hear about, at least, if not 300. And I think about, who do I decide to refer? And I always look for the can-do people. I refer those people who have a great attitude, who have a desire to make things happen, the people that are friendly and interesting and not crazy on email and crazy on the phone, and accusatory of everything and flying off the handle about everything. I refer the people who I would want to work with, and those are people who have great attitudes. And so you have to ask yourself, come back, one more. You have to ask yourself that when people are referring you, are you missing out on opportunities because you're like glum? Are you only connecting with people when you need something, like a job or like more business? Or are you actually reaching out to a lot of other people anytime and to continuing to build those relationships anytime? You know, the reality is people want to do business with people they like, people want to hire people they like, and people want to refer people they like. Someone came out to me the other day at a meeting. Come back up a little, Reagan.
I'm sorry.
That's right. Come back. I was just going to repeat that. Someone came up to me the other day at a meeting, and I hadn't seen him in a couple months, and the last time I saw him, they were actually in a job search, and it looked like they landed. But then he comes up to me, and he tells me how, well, he's taking an in-between job, and you know, his whole persona is just negative. It's not fun. It's not exciting. It's not, hey, I'm the can-do person, and yeah, I took this role because it's kind of an interim for me, but that's okay. I'm enjoying it, and I think there might be future opportunity with it. No, it was just very blah. And then he wants me to refer him to some people, and I'm thinking, I don't think I can. You know, I don't think I want to, because it's my reputation that goes along with the referral. When I think about it, but the majority of my friends are really fun. They're interesting, positive people, because I really don't have time for negativity. And you have to ask yourself the question, you know, what if you're the negative person in the bunch? It's time to get an attitude adjustment. It's time to take the Debbie Downer in you and fire her, because nobody has room in their circle of friends for a Debbie Downer. Nobody wants that person in their life. They are exhausting. And I want to be invigorated and surround myself by those that will bring energy into my world. I was in an event a couple weeks ago, and there was this guy, Jim. He was a presenter. And this woman, or actually a man, Terry, walks up to him and says, in a very monotone voice, Jim, I really enjoyed your talk, but I have to disagree with you on the methodology my experience shows, and he goes, blah, 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 on and on and on. And I'm kind of standing next to Jim thinking, oh, I wonder how long he's going to take this, right? The next person, Sarah, walks up to Jim and says, hey, Jim, wow, that was really incredible. You know, your viewpoints are fascinating, and it's obvious you spent a lot of time thinking about this topic. I'd love to grab a few minutes of your time when it's convenient. And she was just happy and peppy and just exciting to be around. And I went up to Jim afterward, and I said, hey, so which one are you going to meet with? And he looked at me, and he said, do you even need to ask? And it's funny because we both knew. You know, Terry didn't sound like he was any fun at all. I mean, coffee with him sounded nothing short of painful. And so it comes back to, it's really about your choice. But how you choose to wake up each day. Do you want to be happy? Do you want to be sad? Do you want to get the most out of your day? Do you want to complain that it's, you know, hot again? Newsflash, it's the summertime, and it's hot everywhere. So what do you expect? It comes back to changing your expectations, always being that person that people like, that people want to hire, that people want to refer. So how do you become one of those people? How do you become one of those people that gets hired, gets business, gets referred? And the way you do it, there's a couple ways. And these are just little tips. And you know what? They might not be for you. I hope they're for you. I hope they're for everybody. But if one doesn't sound like it's perfect for you, then try one of the other ones, okay? Because I know out of the three that I'm going to talk about, you can at least do one. The first one is to be infectious. And what do I talk about infectious? One of the things that I was telling someone the other day about competent, you know, I really want competent people. And she said, no, you don't. You want infectious people. You want people that embrace it. You want people that want to infect other people with their happiness, with their joyfulness, with their customer service, with the can-do positive attitude. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. That's exactly what I want. I want people to be part of a great team. I want people excited to be there. So this woman, Mary, at our office, she is, I mean, my team, or our team at Executives Network, it is a group of infectious people. Everybody is really happy, really excited to be there. It's a can-do, great environment. And there's this woman, Mary, in particular. She is always happy. She's so funny. And just hanging out with her, you just want to be around her more. And I think about our customers, and they want to be around her more because she's so much fun. But what if you're not funny? Because not everybody's funny, and it's okay to not be funny. But if you're not funny, then here's a couple things that you need to do. You need to smile more. You need to laugh more. You know, I have some friends that I wouldn't call funny at all, but I certainly would call them pretty much the best audience ever, and you actually, because they laugh at everything, and not disingenuously, but they're enjoyable to be around. They're a great audience, and you actually feel funnier around them. You know, think about that. Think of the people that when you speak with them, you don't want to get off the phone. You really want to just spend more and more time with them. And then think about those people that when you do speak with them, you kind of wish you never answered the phone. So start being infectious in terms of smiling and having that can-do attitude and being happy. And I remember Cammie, who talked about personal branding, she said at one point she made the comment, fake it till you make it, right? If you're not infectious right now, fake it till you make it, because it's a learned skill. It's like the water and the poison. The more water you put in it, the more positive you put in it, the less poison there'll be. The negative will go away. So just constantly remind yourself. Also, be on other people's side. Think about your opinion. Think about what you can do to help drive other people's success. I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago, and we had some people in the meeting that were absolutely trying to undermine what we were doing, and they spoke up about it. It was really quite amazing in my mind. I kept sitting there thinking, is this being filmed? Are we on a reality show? Is this one of those training videos of how to handle adversarial situations or adverse situations? It was nuts. But we were talking about changing something, and these people spoke up against the change. But the reality was the change was going to happen whether they wanted to or not. So now they're just viewed as someone in the way. And then on the other hand, there was a guy that I had never met who actually was he was on our side, and I was sitting there, sitting back thinking, while he was talking, boy, are we paying him to say these things? Because he was definitely on our side, and his unsolicited efforts to help us made me want to help him. And did he need any help? I don't know. But I really feel personally indebted to him, and I want to do what I can to further his cause, because he was so, he didn't need to be on our side. He could have taken the, gone along with the complaint train that was, had boarded the meeting and complained all the way through the meeting. But instead, he stepped back and said, you know what, I think what they're doing is the right thing, and here's why, and we want to make him successful. So be on people's side. The other thing is to help others. And there's this, I hate using this term, servant leadership or servant mentality. I feel like it's a strange term, so I don't love that. But the idea of helping others, what can you do for other people? Like when I called Mark and said, hey, I have an idea for you, and it actually could lead him to some pretty significant business, he was very excited. And, you know, he's probably saying, why are you helping me? I was talking to someone yesterday. We had a meeting, and we're looking to help him. I'm helping him in his business. And he said, boy, you know, I really appreciate the help. He said, I don't understand why you're helping me, but I appreciate it. And I made it very clear. I'm like, look, let me tell you why. I like you. I want you to be successful. I see the challenges you're going through. I went through the same challenges. So I want to help you. I think there's great opportunity for you, and I don't want you to miss it, because you definitely need the help. And so he's taking it, and part of me, and then he trusts me, because he sees that I'm just there to help. So think about how you can help others, how you can be on their side, how you can be infectious. Comes down to your attitude, and attitudes turn to outcomes, which turn to incomes. There's an interesting story. There was an interesting article in Fortune magazine a few years ago, and executives were interviewed about the best advice they'd ever gotten. And there was I think it was the CEO of Pepsi at the time, and her name escapes me, but her father gave her the best advice: always assume positive intent. And positive intent, what is positive intent? It's assuming the best. When someone takes an action, don't assume the worst. Don't think that there's a hidden agenda. Assume the best. You know, when someone cuts you off, don't say, hey, they cut me off and they're a horrible driver. Say, hey, you know what? They must really be in a hurry, and they must really need to get somewhere. Maybe it's the hospital. I don't know. But assume some positive intent. You know, the next time you're about to fly off the handle, ask yourself, what was this person's intent? What if instead of thinking the worst of someone, you thought the best of someone? What if you assumed no hidden agendas and no ulterior motives? And what if you just said, you know, there's a good reason why this is happening? Have you ever been behind a car and all of a sudden they stop in the middle of the road and you're sitting there going, what is going on? And then you see a little child with a ball walking across the street and you feel horrible for even questioning that person? You know, quit doing that. Start thinking, hey, maybe there's a child right in front of them, and fortunately, we didn't run them over. You know, start thinking about positive intent. Start assuming every time your spouse does something that you don't understand why, that it was for a very good reason, that they had a great reason, and they had the best of intentions. And think about that in every email. Instead of assuming the worst, assume the best. Now sometimes you're probably thinking people don't deserve positive intent. Sometimes these are employees. You know, if an employee doesn't deserve positive intent, it really means that you've lost trust in them. If you're having to constantly second guess people's motives, you've lost trust in them. You either need to rebuild that trust or you need to move on, because it's not healthy for the organization. If you're working in an environment where people do not perceive positive intent and people are always second-guessing you, maybe you're not a fit for the organization. I remember one company I worked at years ago, and there was one guy who just assumed negative intent for everything I did. And I had pure positive intent. I was trying to better the company. I was trying to meet our goals. I was a team player, but he decided that everything I did was bad. And it made my life, it was horrible. And I thought, you know what? this is not fun. This is not fun at all. Because I'm constantly having to explain my actions. If people just assumed positive intent and assumed that what I'm trying to do is better the company, then they'd understand that these things were in line with that. But if you turn the situation around and assume that what I'm trying to do is trying to undermine the company, then you can come up with 15 different arguments to support that. But it all comes back to positive intent. So ask yourself, do you have positive intent? Are you giving others the benefit of the doubt? And if you're not, then you need to start, because that's the first thing that changes in attitude. When you start giving people the benefit of the doubt and the benefit of positive intent, whether it's your boss, whether it's your coworker, whether it's another employee, then you're going to start letting go and feeling better about things, and it's going to come more naturally. It's going to be easier. You're going to be able to shrug things off a little bit more, and you'll enjoy life more often. There is a story of two monks that I want to tell you about, and it's interesting. They were walking in Tibet to the sacred Mount Kailash, and on their way, they came to a river, and they saw this old woman who needed help crossing the river. And they hoisted her over their shoulders. They carried her across the river, set her safely on the other side. And about 2 hours later, one of the young monks said to the other, he said, "Hey, Shamar, you know, as part of our vows, we're not supposed to have contact with women. Do you think we're going to be punished because we carried that old woman across the river a couple hours ago?" And his buddy said, "Look, friend, you not only carried her across the river a couple hours ago, you've been carrying her for the last 2 hours. Let it go. Quit carrying the old woman." And when you think of it, you have to ask yourself, how many of you are still carrying the old woman? How many of you are letting your past get in the way of your present? How many of you are still mad that you didn't get that job, that you didn't get that promotion, that you didn't get that car that you've always wanted, that whatever it might be, how many of you are still hanging out in the past and not working in the present? And think about it, and think about when you walk out of here, you know, start putting yourself, letting go of the past, putting yourself in the present, because it changes your attitude. It changes the way people want to respond to you. It changes the way people want to do business with you. It's the people who are in the present, who have a great attitude, who are the ones who get the referrals. They get the business. They get the jobs. They get the promotions. I think about some people I know currently who are up for promotions at their job, and they never seem to be the ones that get them. And I look and I say, I know why. There's two things that are going on. One is they're not a leader. You know, the world is made up a lot of chiefs and a lot of Indians. And if you're not the natural leader, figure out other ways to make your world, give yourself more opportunities, whether it's income or whether it's challenges with work, to make yourself more fulfilled. If you are the leader and you're not getting the promotions or you're not getting the jobs of the leadership roles, then you need to ask yourself, what about me is not coming across as that of a leader? What about me is not coming across where I am leading, inspiring, motivating the team? You know, it's no longer, years ago, it was the people who were in the command and control management style were the ones who got ahead. And we're very much in a world of, how do we collaborate with people, and how do we inspire people and motivate people? Now, there's a whole generation that's a little tough to motivate right now because of the world that they've grown up in. But, boy, if you could crack the code there and figure out how to motivate and inspire those kind of people, you'd be one of the greatest leaders of today. So think about the things that you're doing and the things that how your natural behavior might need to change a little bit to really land that next opportunity, to land that next job. And the other thing that I sit back and think about is people forget that when they are looking for their next job or their next opportunity or the promotion, you know, it's not a one-time event. It doesn't happen one day, in just one day. It happens over time. So if you worked at a company for 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years, your opportunity for promotion is happening every single day. And if you're not working that, if you're not cognizant of that and thinking about how is what I'm doing going to affect what I really want, maybe it is a promotion, maybe it's not a promotion, maybe you want to make a lateral move, maybe you want to have different experiences in a different industry. it doesn't always have to be a promotion doesn't necessarily have to be a higher level managing, running more people, running more teams, things like that. But it should be more challenges to you, whatever challenge you desire. But you need to be working at that every single day. It doesn't happen on just one event. It doesn't happen in just the interview. It happens over time. And how are you stepping up and taking leadership and taking ownership of things that are not necessarily your responsibility and taking that ownership and leadership with a smile, with a can-do attitude, with a proud, you know, I'm going to be the one that makes this thing happen. Because it's really your choice. You know, it's your choice to be positive. It's your choice to put yourself, I think about when everyone around you, you know, you have an opportunity when you walk out of here. You have an opportunity to be open to the great things that can come your way, to put yourself in the right position, to meet the right people, to have the right conversation, to be positive, be optimistic, and be really happy. And it's truly, truly your choice. And I really hope you all choose wisely. And I hope you got a little bit out of, you know, what are the two or three things that I could do to make myself a little more visible, a little more interesting to those, whether it's those that could hire me, those that could refer me, or those that could promote me. So I think, I don't know if we have any questions. Maybe if we want to open up the lines, Jody, and see if we might have a few questions.
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please.
And while we're waiting on that, let's just talk about if you do have other questions afterward, you can post them on the Greater IBM Forum, the Career Forum. There's a forum called Ask Molly. If you have questions on your job search and you haven't read the new job search, you got to read it. I was in a meeting a couple, and here's me doing my self-promotion, right? I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago in Denver, and there was a guy in the meeting who said, I finally read your book, Molly. I wish I read it a year ago. I did everything wrong. And this guy, I think, has a great attitude. And it made me happy that, first of all, that he realized that he was doing a lot of the things wrong. But I'm so excited for him. I'm actually taking a vested interest in finding him a job because I think he's just got such great potential for an organization, and any company would be so lucky to have him. But now that he's stopping doing all the things wrong, he's going to be a much better person at the organization. So, anyway, and also I have a blog, mollywendell.com, and I just put an article on attitude up the other day. So we talked a little bit about it in that, but a lot of it is job networking. It's job search and networking on the blog. So Jody, do we have any questions? Or
this time there are no questions.
Okay, then Regan, I think we don't have any questions. I think we're
Molly.
Oh, Flora, hey.
Hey, how are you? You do have a question from Keith Ginsburg. Is Keith still on the line?
Mr. Ginsburg, if you're online, please press star 1. Not showing him in queue at this time.
Okay. Keith is muted, but here's his question. He's not very clear on what is the call to action.
What is the call to action? The call to action is the biggest thing is to change your attitude. It's to change the way you behave in front of other people, whether it is in your email, in your voicemail, in your personal interaction with other people. If you're constantly finding yourself not in the game for opportunities, it's probably a lot to do with your persona and how you are, what people perceive of you, and what kind of can-do person you are. So really the call to action is to do a couple things in terms of how you communicate. And a lot of attitude comes down to communication. And if you don't feel like you're the greatest communicator, then maybe you need to read a couple books on communication and have more effective communication. But we talked about a few of those things in the call today. Hopefully that helps.
At this time, we do have two questions. Ms. DiZanzo, you may ask your question.
Hi, Molly. My name is Yuta DiZanzo, and I attended one of your seminars on, I want to see how to do the interview where you had mentioned about smiling. And I wanted to tell you that really, really worked for me. I had a job interview, and it was over the phone. And it was the hardest thing ever because I was really nervous. And I was in a situation where I didn't think I was going to get the job. 22 years with IBM, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I need this job. And I put a mirror in front of me, and the whole entire time I was smiling. And I could swear that person knew that I was smiling because she had this feeling like, oh, my gosh, I got to meet you. I saw your picture on Instant Messenger. And now that I'm talking to you, I just have to hire you. I have to figure out how I'm going to hire you. And
wow.
I'm going to go ahead, personnel, and I'm going to do whatever I can. And Molly, this is what got me my job. I want to thank you.
Oh.
And I'm even nervous talking about it right now because it brings out a lot of emotions again. But the smiling definitely did the trick. And I think that if you come across positive and can-do attitude, you can get the job.
That is, now, give me your name again real quick.
UTA.
Uh-huh.
Dizenzo, D-I-Z-E-N-Z-O.
Oh, that is awesome. That is incredible. But see how simple it was? See how simple the concept was? It was
and
right?
It's funny you say that because I want to say the voice message is still no good. I think I need to work on the voice message.
Give me
but
your number,
the picture, the picture that I have was a very happy moment that I took with my mom. I cut my mom out of the picture. But it's just a headshot of a really happy moment, and the smile on that picture. The person said, like, I just had to meet you. I just knew I had to meet you when I saw the picture. It's the attitude. That's everything.
You bring up a really interesting point because the picture, think about your LinkedIn picture, your Facebook picture, and what that is also articulating about you. I've gone, I know some recruiters who go a lot through LinkedIn and Facebook to find people, and they'll look at a picture and make a quick assessment, even though you're not supposed to, right? But they do, and we all do, and they'll say, if they don't look like they're interesting, then we don't even call them. And so you think about how is that just one simple little thing taking you out of the running? But that is so exciting. I mean, I am so happy for you.
And I'm glad that you gave me that tip.
Cool, awesome.
This is Floor. Would you mind very much sharing on to me in the chat room your email? I'd love to talk to you later.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay, next question.
Remote Word Center, you may ask your question.
Yes,
your line is open, sir.
Do we copy? Can you hear me, Molly?
Yes, I copy you. And I didn't get your name, though. Say your name again, please.
My name is a difficult Dutch name. It's Schwarzenberg.
Oh, okay, Schwarzenberg.
Yes, that's me.
Okay, great. What is your question?
How much time would it typically take to overcome those negative attitudes meeting with those people that you have to sell something to? I'm in sales and business development,
so
how much time does that normally take? I mean, people, they have to like you to buy from you. That's a psychological thing.
Right. So how much? So are you coming from a situation where people do not like you currently and you have to change that, or are you coming across from a situation of people don't know you yet and you need to get them to like you?
Oh, no. I work for IBM, so
right.
It means that they know I want to sell them some machines.
Okay. So here's what you might consider doing. And this is the quick and easy way. When someone knows who you work for and what you want to sell them, part of the mystique is gone, right? So one of the easiest ways to overcome the idea that this person's just coming in and trying to sell me something is to come in and get a meeting with them and figure out how you can help them and how you can connect them to someone that might be interesting. I actually had a conversation with a guy 2 weeks ago who does technology consulting, and he said, you know what, I never walk in. Sure, there's a lot of things that I can sell, but I never walk in and try and sell people and talk. I never talk about our services. I never talk about what we do. I ask about them and what they do. And
right.
As I'm asking, then I figure out ways to help them. Like, you know what? You want to meet the CIO of this company that might be in a different industry, that might be working on a similar project. You know, can I can I connect the two of you? Maybe the three of us can go to lunch or something, because I really think you ought to know this person. When you connect people with people, and it's truly a genuine desire to connect them, people release their guard, and they see you as a resource, a valuable resource of knowledge. I was having lunch with a lawyer the other day, a pretty big-name lawyer in town, and he told me his son was looking for a job. And I said, well, what's he looking for? And he told me a little bit, and I said, you know what? I've got the perfect person for him to talk to. And he said, well, should I send you a resume? I'm like, no, nobody cares about the resume. Let me just tell this guy that he needs to meet your son. And he goes, oh, okay. So I did, and the guy said, so I called the guy up. I'm like, look, you need to meet this guy's son. Let me tell you why, and just make it happen. And he said, no, sure, no problem. So they're meeting today, actually. And but this guy, the lawyer, felt so good because I was helping him, and really I was helping his son. If you can help someone's child, they love you. That person loves you for life. But think about every time you meet someone, how can you help them? How can you connect them with a lead, an idea? Maybe you can help them find some more business. Maybe it's your customers. You say, you know, you ought to be doing good business with this company. I was over there the other day, and it sure looked like they could use your services. So give them leads, give them ideas, give them contacts, be there to help them, and not make it all about IBM.
So it's really about people skills.
Yes. Yeah. And that doesn't – you can change things on a dime with that concept. You don't need 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 3 years. You can change relationships overnight with that.
Well, I'm a married man, so I don't know about that.
Try it. You know what? Be open to the idea that it just might work. You'd be amazed. So you never know.
Right. No. You're right. It's about people, and I try to listen to them and to find out their problems, what I can help them with. And yes. Well,
and
it's late over here in Europe. It's almost 9 o'clock.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it might be too late to help someone today, but certainly all day tomorrow, right? But you think about, you know, sometimes when I can't figure out how to help someone with a problem, I sit there and go, who should I introduce them to? Who would be fun for them to meet? And I move to the person. Because when all else fails, I figure everybody could use a new friend. And so I move on to that. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Well, that's very useful advice. I appreciate it.
All right. And Rommel, you come from, you said Europe, right?
Right.
And I think someone asked a question about the concept that does this work with across all national boundaries? I mean, sometimes, and I hate to stereotype Europeans, but sometimes they can appear more serious than others.
Right. That's true. And then over here, IBM is considered an expensive brand, so they rather buy something cheap often. And what can I say? That's a difficult objection in the sales process to overcome.
So, but that objection sitting in the sales process is because you don't have the relationship. When you have the relationship, when you have the relationship, little things like a price premium tend to go away, and because people trust you, and so I wouldn't worry so much about. You know, start focusing on building that relationship, getting them to like you, doing them favors, having a great attitude, always being the great guy. And the idea of and there's another idea that I want to throw out at you. That is a cool concept. And I don't know if I've talked about – I think I did talk about this in the interview piece, but I was using it relative to the job search. But it works everywhere because I test it a lot because I just think it's the coolest concept ever. And it's called the takeaway. And when you – it's like a child's toy. You give a child a toy, and maybe they don't want it so much, but if you take it away, they really want it, right? So it's
right, I know. That's the monkey factor.
Yeah, so think about starting your conversation with, you know, we might not be the right company for you to do business with. We might not be it. We might not be the right one. Take yourself out of the game and let them come clamoring back for you. And start them, you know, when you do the takeaway and it's relevant, people start selling for you. So you don't.
Yes,
you don't,
yes. No, I know what you mean, and that's
right?
What you have to have a team of people in different cultures. And I mean, IBM often says that they have worldwide standardized processes, but it's always between people when they do buy.
Yeah, but it's the psychological concept of the takeaway, and this. It works quite a bit. You know, maybe we're too expensive for you, but let's talk about what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, maybe there's other ways I can help you. I remember.
Well, I have a quota of $16 million U.S. dollars, so that's quite a quota to fulfill.
Right, but you know what? The people who have, and congratulations to you for having such a quota, because many people, IBM, wouldn't give that opportunity to have such a quota. So you must be doing something right, right?
Well, I ended up within IBM because IBM acquired our company.
Oh, okay. Good. That's exciting.
So, we have to sell our solutions as they are.
You just have to think about how do I build those relationships? How do I make that happen? So just focus more, step back, focus more on the relationship. And less on, you know, making the daily number. And I tell you that the daily numbers will come when you focus more on the relationship. So, Joe,
right. Well, we do accounting solutions, so it makes a lot of sense, you know. And when the Obama administration has a budget deficit, you know, I can sell him an accounting system that really works.
We'll see if we can network you in that way. All right. Jody, thank you, Rommel. Jody, do we have any other questions?
This time there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up then. Thank you all so much for participating. And, Floor, do you want to close with anything?
No, I'm fine. Molly, thank you very much for joining us this month. So you have an event on in August. Do you want to tell our folks about that?
Yes, I do. It's a very exciting event. David Allen is going to be joining us. And if you know David Allen, he wrote a book called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And the guy's amazing when it comes to productivity and how to, you know, we've all heard the concept of never look at the same piece of paper twice. He makes the idea of how to do more. And we live in a world where we're constantly trying to do more. He makes the idea of getting more done, it just makes it so much easier. And he's fun and interesting, and I guarantee that you'll walk out of that session more productive, less stressed, and excited to try to apply some of his techniques to get more done. So it's David Allen, if you want to Google him. He wrote a book called Getting Things Done. And he'll be on August 12th, same time, 2 p.m. Eastern, in the U.S., 11 a.m. Pacific. And I think that's it. It's done. I'm excited to have him on. So,
Molly, and I want to just point out that David Allen and Molly befriending him and bringing him to you as part of the series Molly and Friends came as a direct result of some of the feedback we've gotten in the surveys about those speakers that this community wanted to hear from. So I just want to thank you again, because with Stephen Covey, you were listening to what this community wanted to hear and extending to your colleagues here your own personal relationships and professional relationships to benefit the greater advancement of the community at large. So we can thank Molly once again for doing a lot of the legwork that many of us are profiting from in terms of career and inspirational and professional expertise. So thank you again, Molly. And I'm pointing that out so that you would be just as open to completing those surveys. I know that we send them after each event, and there may be a bit of a pain, but they are very useful to us to know what kinds of things you're looking for. And again, that's how Dave is coming to the Greater IBM Connection next month, August 12th. And as Molly points out, at 2 o'clock, but stay close to the time in case there's a reschedule.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.